And what I realized is just do something different. Do something different. That's always been kind of my secret sauce, is don't pay attention to what anyone else is doing. Do it separately. Do it different.
Plug into the mind of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. This is your host, Jason Mark Campbell. Very excited to bring a dear friend and someone who has a vast amount of experience when it comes to leading the marketing within organizations. I've had the pleasure of working with him alongside in Mindvalley, and I was very impressed with the history that he had working for global agencies doing promotional campaigns, marketing campaigns, PR campaigns around massive brands. If ever you've ever heard of a rum brand called the Kraken, which is, although I don't drink anymore, is a beautiful brand, but I was involved in the marketing of such a product. And today he's worked with so many authors when it comes to personal growth, and more recently being heavily invested in psychedelics, which is a growing industry. There's a lot of deregulation that's happening across that industry. There's a lot of benefits that are being highlighted for that industry. And he has been applying his mind into helping people build awareness, understand better, have advocacy, and really bring the marketing around that field. I want to dive into a lot of the history around what is it like working in those various industries. Are there some interesting differences or similarities from marketing across one industry to the other? And what is the very nuance of going into the world where you have a lot of regulation, you're dealing with a substance that is not legal everywhere, and what kind of limitations are exposed, and what can you do to be more creative in the way that you market? Troy Allen is joining me right from Utah. Very excited to see you on the platform. Troy, welcome.
Jason, first off, I need you to introduce me everywhere I go. That's fantastic. Can you just be my hype man? That was great.
You know, it's so interesting. I feel like I've talked about this in a few of my last episodes, but oftentimes when you do podcasts, people record their intros separately. And I find that's a bit of a cop-out. I think you need to hype your guests before you get started. And, you know, I try to do my best.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great because most of the time people make me write my own bio, which is impossible to do. And I was like, yeah, give it to me, Jason. Yes. But I appreciate it, brother.
It's like, we have AI now, so they're going to ask you to write your own bio. And like, let me submit that to ChatGPT for you. Like, oh my God. Well, I want to leapfrog right from there, because you kind of came, when you were at Mindvalley, I thought it was very interesting. You came from an agency world and you're talking with like large budgets, large organizations, very much working with the best of the best when it comes to everyone in their specialized field. At least that is a lot of the assumptions I have when coming from the American agency world. And when you came into Mindvalley, you walked into an organization that was growing. A lot of people were more like jack of all trades, and we were talking in a specific industry, which was personal growth, authors, you know, publishing. And I'd be curious to kind of open there and seeing what were some of the biggest shocks you had walking into this specific industry coming from something that was much larger.
Yeah. The first answer is the hugging. Everyone in Mindvalley just gave me a hug when I walked in, which was very awkward because, you know, in Malaysia, it's a very sweaty place. So I was a very sweaty person and people would just hug me and be like, but yeah, no, that was the weirdest part about it when I arrived. But no, truthful answer is, I think one of the weirdest things that I experienced was when I started an agency, I was like, cool, I have my own company. What a great thing to do. I'm my own boss. And then in the agency worlds, you realize that all of a sudden, like if you have 15 clients, you have 15 different bosses. And you're thinking about 15 different things on a very regular basis, right? So like from 9 to 10, all of a sudden you're focused on a vodka company. And then from 11 to 12, you're focused on Louis Vuitton or the children's place or like all of these like things that are disconnected. And when I got to Mindvalley, it was just super interesting because I got to focus on one thing, and like that thing being personal development and a team of people who are also focused on personal development. It was primarily just a culture shock, really. But then, yeah, just everyone having their own specialty in their niche and pointed in one direction was completely new to me. Yeah, I don't know if it's better or worse. It was different.
I don't think I've ever been in an environment where I had to do such a stark switching of context based on the client. And I'd be curious to know, when you're in that field where you're in a specific role and you have to do that switch and you're working in marketing, what do you think is the essence of marketing that has to continuously be on and is moving consistently from client to client that people are looking for when they say, I need marketing, I need some stuff around strategy? Where do you think is the way that you bring the most value when it comes to marketing?
Yeah, so it always comes down to storytelling, right? Like that's the number one thing in marketing is talking to a CEO, hearing the story, and being like, all right, let's tell it in the best way possible and let's get it out to the most people, right? And I think at Mindvalley, the most interesting part about it was having so many different authors, but still trying to tell this overarching story, right? So we were working with so many different people, and then there was the vision story and trying to combine all of those pieces when you only have 30 seconds of someone's time, right? Like it always got tricky, but what I really discovered was the secret sauce is just pattern disruption. Like that really is the essence of marketing to me, is just pattern disruption. You see so many people that are all trying to latch on to the same thing, right? So all of a sudden it's like, VSLs, we're all going to do VSLs. What are our competitors doing? And everyone tries to do the same thing. And what I realized is just do something different. Do something different. And that's always been kind of my secret sauce, is don't pay attention to what anyone else is doing. Do it separately. Do it different.
There's a quote, and I don't know who says that, so I do apologize if I'm not giving the right credits, but it's like everything's great until the marketers come in and replicate it so many times that it's ruined. And so when I think of 10 years ago, and yet you had some sort of VSL format, then you had like the webinar, then you had like three-piece of content launch formula. But I also feel like there's a cycle, right? Because then like if nobody's been using it for a while now because they all jump on a new thing, something that was maybe a little more retro is now the new hot thing. I don't know if you've been in the industry long enough to see that cycle happen.
I was just thinking that the other day. So I went to a movie with my family and there was a group in front of me wearing, do you remember JNCO jeans? Those absurdly big jeans. How old are you? You're around my age, right?
I'm 36.
Okay. Well, and you're also Canadian. So, you know, maybe everyone wasn't rocking JNCOs, but they were like these huge jeans. And I remember trying to buy them and my mom being like, I'm sorry, I can't buy you these jeans. They just look ludicrous. And then like all of a sudden moved to skinny jeans, but I was at a movie and these kids were wearing JNCO jeans holding skateboards. And I was like, I would have been in fashion. Like in this year, 30 years later, I would have been in fashion. And I think marketing is very much the same. Like, honestly, right now, if we talk about, let's say, A-Fest, right? A-Fest, great party, great time. We try to get the word out.
I'll just add a little caveat for those who might not be familiar. A-Fest is an event that Mindvalley puts together, high-level personal growth authors, festival kind of vibes. So I just want to clarify that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm speaking Mindvalley. I'm back in the game. But I swear, personalized invitations mailed to people, like mailers will be back in fashion, right? Because for the longest time it was junk mail, junk mail, junk mail, nobody cares. But now if you open something and it was a little bit custom, you would actually read it. And I think a lot of that in marketing just comes in a cycle over and over and over again.
You know, it's funny. I think you would look at five, six years ago, the biggest thing everybody was talking about is you need a funnel. You need a funnel. You got to automate a funnel. You got to build a funnel. Funnel, funnel, funnel. Hackers is a big event. Everybody's moving to ClickFunnel and they're building their funnels. And everyone who's wanting to grow their business, they have to hire people that are experts in funnels. And then there was a bit of a switch where then it was like, no, you need a sales team. You need a sales team. You need people on the phone. You need to be closing high ticket, high ticket, high ticket. This is it. This is it. This is it. What you just said about the physical letter has always been something that a couple of ninjas in the background are kind of doing, but I feel now that everybody's like, oh, we're not picking up the phone. We're not scheduling appointment. We're not doing any application calls or onboarding calls because everyone's like, yeah, every time I sign up to a funnel, I know it's a sales pitch. Every time I jump on a call with somebody, I know it's a sales pitch. So I feel like the physical letter is definitely going to make some sort of comeback right now. But also the technology makes it easier than ever to automate these types of things too.
But again, a little bit of creativity. Open a letter and have like a fake butterfly shoot out, right? Like just something that makes it a little bit different. And I feel like if marketing was a cake, everyone's trying to copy the exact cake when it's like nobody is actually trying to build their own cake, if that makes sense. Like it just seems like everyone's trying to do the same thing to the highest caliber, and you focus on what everyone's doing and you try to do it a little bit better, but nobody stops and says, like, why are we doing it this way?
I'd be curious to see what you've noticed, given that now with the technology, like, doing anything is easier. Like, I can be Joe, who's just starting one man show with a good platform, and I can maybe do direct mailers. I can host a webinar. I can build a funnel. I can use AI and do some personalized chatbots. So it feels like a lot more of the strategies are accessible to me. Do you find it's harder to find what is something that is unique and creative, or do you think the recipe's always been the same?
So creativity and the medium are always two very different things. Right? So chatbots exist now, right? But what you do with that chatbot is very different. Like, for example, everyone is very afraid about, like, AI and copywriting, right? AI is going to take over copywriting. I love that most people are doing copywriting with AI. I absolutely love it because AI is not tongue in cheek. AI can't stand out with, like, a personal story. And obviously it will get better, but it takes the recipe and it goes, okay, here's the best email we can send based on what everyone else is doing, because that's what it does. It aggregates information. So still, just even with an AI chatbot to start a conversation, how you program that thing, right? Like, is super important. So that first sentence that it says to enable the conversation, make it different. Make it something different. Not, hi, Brenda, how can I help you? Anything else. Take a thought about what your business is and what you do and just make it stand out slightly more.
You have a recent client you've been working with where you've put this kind of shock and awe and it actually brought in some results that might highlight this in application?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, one of the most successful emails I've ever written in my career, and I'm not really a copywriter, but every once in a while I'm like, oh, I got an idea. I want to try this out. It was for T. Harv Eker. And it was during COVID, and it was a $5 book he was selling. It was like The Spiritual Laws of Money. And the email started with why I hate Starbucks. And it's this long story about, like, him going to Starbucks during COVID, wearing a mask, having his name spelled wrong, spilling his coffee on himself, and just this bad experience. At the end, it was like, I don't want you to waste $9 at Starbucks. Instead, I'm going to give you this book for $5. Don't go to Starbucks, buy the book. It was tongue in cheek and it was engaging and it converted like crazy. Like, I think it was one of his highest converting emails he's ever had. But again, just taking a slightly different angle than what everybody else is doing and not following the perfect recipe and doing it your own way.
That sounds terrifying if I'm someone that prefers following a recipe book and that I need to see what others have done to be able to replicate it in my business, because this whole creativity thing feels uncertain, feels scary. How do you lean into that? And what are the things that I should be practicing to kind of find myself be more comfortable getting into this space?
Yeah. Now we're going to get a little personal developing. So I apologize. But I mean, think about how you grew up, right? You're riding a bike and you didn't have your helmet on and your mom freaked out and said, put on your helmet. You go to school and your job is to, like, regurgitate information. You get all of these inputs inside of you that are like, in an essence, be less you over and over and over again. Learn it this way. For me, it was taking a step back. So I have the weirdest approach when it comes to, like, a new client. I don't want to know what their competitors are doing. I have no desire to know what the competition is doing because that plants a little bit of seed in my head. And again, this is the exact opposite advice that anyone else will give you, but I do things the opposite way, right? It plants the seed in your head of, okay, here's what they're doing. Here's what's working. How do I just tweak it? Instead of having the starting point of, like, what would work for me? Like, what would I want to see that would actually make me go, oh, I'd buy that, or I'd read that a little bit longer? And taking that step away from just, like, the traditional way of looking at things and trying to get back into the essence of who was I and, like, what was my ability before the world started chipping away at it, and getting back to that, like, childhood essence, that's where the creativity comes from. And a lot of times, like, that creativity, it might not be marketing for everyone, right? Like, if you might not be a marketer, but you could be a brilliant accountant who does things in a very different way, or you could be a brilliant musician, right? Like, who doesn't listen to how music is formulated now, but starts creating stuff your own way. So it might not be the recipe to be like, here's how to be a marketer, But there was something that's fundamentally you, like inside of you, that you had as a baby that will express itself as long as you give yourself the options to express itself. And for me, you know, my secret recipe has been psychedelics, but everyone finds it their own way.
Well, that's always an interesting segue, given that that's the industry that you work with. And I do want to go into that space. I first wanted to kind of extract a bit more on that creative side, which is you found yourself being attracted to the marketing side of things, how to interrupt patterns, how to get people's attention, how to get them into an action that they're going to purchase something that is for their benefit. When did you start finding yourself being attracted to marketing as an industry? Because you come from a professional sports background. I think you were into skateboarding and you were like, you know, doing a lot of things which were more sports related. And then you found yourself into marketing. So I'd be curious to see how those dots connected in your life.
Yeah, for me, I mean, so skateboarding for me was always the sport I was really into because there was no coach, there was no judging. It was just yourself, right? Like you thought you could do something and you would try to do it and either you do or you don't, but no one's really clapping for you except for the rest of the skateboarding community. It was all based on your personal desires and will. And I found that in marketing, again, the same mentality I took on that is like, if a client has something that he's selling that I really believe in, and I go, I can sell that. Like I can get more people to know about what you're doing because it's changing humanity. It's helping the world. Once I lock into that, then like the same desire as like kick flipping a 10 stair and trying not to die goes into, you know, like, more people can know about this and I can find a creative way of doing it. And yeah, that mentality carries on both avenues.
I love it. Which brings us to I don't even know if it's psychedelics are still controversial, because at least in my echo chamber, a lot of people talk about it. And you speak about going back and doing this journey of discovering more of who you are, what you're attached to. So psychedelics, I mean, first off, it's fascinating to see how the industry is growing. I think following a lot of the deregulation that happened around the marijuana industry, you're seeing a similar trend happen around a lot of these psychedelics. And so obviously you've shared already that this has been a tool that you've used to reconnect with your own creativity. But I'd be curious to see what has been going on in this industry for someone who might still be following the story, which is like, you know, war on drugs are bad, don't touch this, stay away. And, you know, you're kind of fighting that narrative in general.
I am fighting that narrative in general. I always joke, like, the challenge that psychedelics having right now is if you tell someone you're into psychedelics, they picture you in, like, you live in Southeast Asia, the guy in the leather vest on the slack line, and you're like, oh, that's who does drugs, right? And ever since I was involved with a company that focused on psychedelic education, and it was the first time I did conscious psychedelics, I was about 30, now I'm 40, but I remember popping up from a ceremony of about 3 grams of mushrooms, eye mask on, live music. We sat up and the first thing I said was, holy shit, I've been doing drugs wrong my entire life and everybody needs to know about this. Like that was the first thing that came to my head. And ever since then, like really my mission has been to let people know the therapeutic options that are available to them outside of traditional medicine, right? So everything right now, and honestly, I put psychedelics and personal development in a very similar space. You can get to a state of zen, of a state of internal being, understanding who your spirit is through breathwork, but you can also do it with mushrooms. And for a lot of people who haven't had a breakthrough in breathwork yet, mushrooms is a great starting point to kind of understand what that feeling is. And then it sort of evolves. And then all of a sudden, like nowadays, I don't even do that many psychedelics because I know the feeling and I can get there in other ways, like meditating and breath work. And yeah, the goal has been to kind of bring that to the masses. And in terms of like the way that I look at kind of everything as a competition, I'm up against pharmaceutical companies, right? I'm up against people who are like, hey, take an antidepressant and call me in the morning, when that might not necessarily be the right answer for everyone. And my goal is to just make sure that everyone has other options available if traditional medicine has failed them in any way.
I find it's always interesting in these emerging markets, whether it's in psychedelics or it's in coaching, there's players that are out there bringing the education, trying to bring forward these kind of health benefits, but you're also dealing with the fact that there's very little regulation in these industries. And so you can have a lot of kind of bad apples that come through, some people that are, you know, maybe doing more damage than good. And I'd be curious to know, what are you witnessing within that industry, and how do you make sure that that's not hurting the progress as opposed to pushing it forward?
Yeah. So the company, my passion project right now, it's a company called Guides Collective, but that's exactly what we are aiming to kill. Essentially, like, we're in the third wave of psychedelics. So the first wave was a bunch of shamans in Peru and different places taking these medicines in a community and really having it bring them together, make a sense of oneness, and was just a really powerful tool. And then in the 70s, you know, it kind of made this resurgence of mushrooms and LSD, but done in the most irresponsible ways possible because no one knew what they were doing, right? Like, it was like, hey, have you heard of this thing called acid? No? Okay, well, I'm going to squirt this in your mouth and let's see what happens, right? Or like, how many mushrooms should I take? It's like, I don't know, take this handful, right? And that was the second wave that really kind of set this psychedelic movement back. But now we're in this third wave. And this third wave, we have to get it right. We have to get it right or we go back again. But this is the responsible use of psychedelics. And what I'm trying to do is make sure that anyone who's interested in psychedelics, they can connect with a guide that's right for them. So are you familiar with BetterHelp?
Yeah, it's like this telehelp or chat-based therapeutic line where if you're looking for some mental health support, you can subscribe to this and have somebody to talk to.
Yeah, exactly. So what BetterHelp did for talk therapy was really open it to a brand new market, because before BetterHelp, you had a directory of like therapists that you could maybe talk to, right? And in that directory, there was a whole bunch of acronyms you didn't understand, like MMD, focused in this, and you were just shopping through there. What BetterHelp did was really just have this questionnaire where you say, hey, here's what I'm going through. And then BetterHelp goes, here's a therapist focused in this. So if it was sexual trauma, or if it was, you know, going through a divorce, you had a therapist that was really specific to your needs. And that's what I'm trying to do in psychedelics, which is essentially the same thing, because right now, if you were like, hey, I'm a little bit depressed and I've heard psychedelics are good, what do you do with that information, right? Do you eat a bunch of mushrooms? Do you take some LSD? Do you smoke DMT? Like, you know, there's really no rule book. And what I try to do is basically take what you're going through and then link you up with the vetted guide that's right for you. So someone who was an expert in, if it's religious trauma you had, here's someone who focuses on religious trauma. You're on SSRIs, so maybe mushrooms aren't right for you, but let's focus on this other medicine and really like get you to the right person. So whatever psychedelic experience you have, it's a positive one.
Like, even as you're having this conversation, I can't help but have a part of me that's thinking like, oh my God, are we allowed to be talking about this? Like, is this something that's still, because you're talking about illegal substances in most countries. And so how does that work right now? Is it because it's a gray area and like you're out there marketing this and, you know, there's the part of me that's like, I think this is great if you're bringing resources and I'm in full support. But there's a part of me that's like, oh my God, how do you do that?
Yeah, well, one is I worked with a lot of good lawyers at the very beginning, right? And psychedelics, it's a little bit ludicrous, the laws around it. Like, for example, for the last psychedelic company I was working for, we saw all of this search traffic towards mushrooms. And I was like, okay, people seem to want to access mushrooms. Let's make a mushroom grow kit. So mushrooms become illegal. You have spores you can buy. You have a box that you can buy that will grow those spores. Those two things are legal. What ends up growing becomes technically illegal, right? So there's all of these weird rules around psychedelics. Like, for example, the company that I own, it's completely legal because we don't supply medicine. So to go around and talk about the benefits of MDMA for PTSD or psilocybin for depression is completely legal. Speaking to a guide about that is completely legal. But where it becomes the gray area is how you access the medicine. So a lot of times a guide won't provide medicine, but if you go get it somewhere else and you take it in front of a guide, that's legal. That's a facilitated journey. And really, no one has done anything wrong except for, again, how someone procures it. But that's also not, it's not regulated at an individual level. And all states are kind of sliding in that direction. It's becoming very close to the same way marijuana went.
I had this interesting story. So I enjoy coffee. That may be my drug of choice. And so in Ottawa, Canada, I'm downtown, very close to the parliament, and I'm walking down the street and there's this little espresso bar. And the genius, I did a podcast episode here speaking about how this person refined his craft in roasting the perfect beans, serving the best espressos. So if I go to Ottawa, I need to go see this man, Jean-Philippe. He wears a three-piece suit and he serves me the best espresso I've ever had in my life. I love it. So I do that. I have my espresso and I'd park my car on the side of the street. And as I walk out and I come to get to the car, I notice in the corner of my eye, there's a lot of these crazy colors from a building on the side. And I turn and I realize there's a store right there selling psilocybin. And it's like a marijuana store, which is legal in Canada. And I've been seeing those pop up everywhere, but for psychedelics. I walk in and I'm kind of confused because like right beside me was like a police car who's also having a bit of a coffee in the morning right next to it. I'm confused and I'm like, what the hell's going on? Isn't this like, you're a drug dealer in the middle of downtown running a shop that's openly selling marijuana? And he was like, yeah, some of the police officers come and buy it sometime as well. They had like chocolate-based psilocybins. They had drinks. They had all sorts of things that were based. And I was like, what the hell's going on? So I can see this trend of deregulation. I'm fascinated because going back 20 years ago and telling you that there'd be a shop selling psilocybin didn't even think possible. And I'm seeing this happen and I'm like, this is really fascinating. There's a wave definitely that's happening there. Is this the same thing you're seeing in some certain states, or is that something maybe happening only in Canada?
So it is, and it is my biggest fear on this movement, is that you can go out and buy mushrooms and pop them like they're Skittles and see what happens, right? Like psychedelics, it's a powerful, powerful, powerful tool. And if pointed in the right direction, it's fantastic. But taken the wrong way, when you're in the wrong set or setting, meaning the wrong mindset or the wrong setting, like for example, I couldn't imagine taking psychedelics at a concert anymore. I couldn't imagine. It sounds like my own personal hell. Like I take it in my own room with the right music, with the right people. I'm doing breath work. And this kind of open market, and by the way that this open market works is it's technically not psilocybin. So do you remember when weed first started kind of going legal and they started selling different kind of cannabinoids?
I remember hearing something called synthetic THC, and they were kind of getting around the rules because they would create these compounds that didn't have a law yet, and they would skid around that.
That's what's happening right now with mushrooms. It's like, okay, you describe psilocybin as this. We're going to take this molecule. We'll move it over here. So it's psilocybin technically is still illegal in a lot of places, but these different versions of it are. But you shouldn't be selling candy bars to people who aren't ready, right? Like that is the thing that I'm trying to avoid in this, because Jason, I'm telling you, ayahuasca, it changed my life. It changed the way that I looked at even marketing, because it brought me back to that childlike essence. And that childlike essence is my superpower and it's everybody else's. And the more you shed layers of all of the gunk that's built on you, the more you become yourself and whatever you're trying to do, whether it's marketing or start a business, the easier it becomes, because you're playing in you without the gunk, if that makes sense.
Well, I'd say there is a lot of gunk. I think there's a lot of people just cloning what the other person's doing only to realize that everybody's doing something that's making them more depressed. I mean, I've went down the rabbit hole, I need to build a social media. I need to do this by posting like these others. And it almost seems like the closest thing to building an army of zombies that don't even know why they're doing what they're doing. And then we're not even getting the attention we're hoping. And so it feels a bit depressive when you think about that. And I think what you're bringing in as a perspective on how to do marketing, which is closer to the self, seems a lot lighter and seems like it's much more effective.
It is. Do you remember at Mindvalley, when I got there, we were like addicted to the launch. Do you remember that? Every month we could launch a new product and we knew that some products would work well and some weren't. And we're like, oh, I can't wait for 4 more months when we can launch that product again that we know converts well. And do you remember like in those leadership meetings where I would just be like, master subscription. We need a master subscription. What if we just said, hey, would you like to buy this product for $500? Or would you like everything that Mindvalley owns for $250 a year? And there was so much reluctance because they had been doing the same thing the same way over and over. And the entire conversation was, how do we do this same thing better? Right. And yeah, I just find that it's not necessarily psychedelics, but the more you just shed a layer of why are we trying to do the same thing better? Like the easier marketing becomes, the more you play, the more it is, again, a pattern disruption, something that just looks different than every landing page they've ever been on. That's where people pay attention.
I find it interesting that I don't know which part of which wave we would be where we're seeing stories, say, of Steve Jobs that's talking about people needing to think different and that there was an era where he really wanted to make sure that people did some sort of psychedelic experience if they're going to be on any kind of creative team for product design or for marketing. Are we seeing something there that was a bit ahead of the curve, or was that an outlier? Is this something you've studied yourself as to the role that marketing psychedelics and that wave happened?
Yeah, no, that is what my entire business model was based on. Because it was Steve Jobs a long time ago, but now it's everyone under the sun. I mean, Huberman has a whole thing about his mushroom experience and what it meant to him, right? You have Sam Harris, like Aubrey Marcus. You try to listen to anyone who's making a splash in the world, and they just kind of offhanded go, oh yeah, psychedelics changed my mind. And now we're going to go to this, right? And so we have all of these people hearing that information. Psychedelics changed my mind. Psychedelics changed my mind. But there's no specific place for them to go. I built a business in reaction to people like Steve Jobs telling the rest of the world this was the most important thing I've ever done, but then giving no one an outline, like a real roadmap to explore how the hell they would do it if they're a soccer mom living in Indiana, right? So I think this is still part of that third wave, but it's just how do you get someone in the same direction if they do believe that it's something they want to explore.
I love that. Troy, I'm glad you're bringing that leadership into this field. It's fun to see that your marketing efforts are being applied into something that is bringing a lot of different ways of thinking in the world, because it seems like we're at a crux where we're realizing a lot of the things we've been taking for granted, the things we've been continuously wanting to, let's do this better, let's do that better, when we're realizing maybe we need to do things completely differently. Not to put too many words similar to Steve Jobs as we finish on a story from him. I absolutely love what you've shared so far when it comes to marketing. And again, in a world that everybody's just trying to do the same thing, maybe slightly different or slightly better, or maybe exactly the same, but more efficient. What you're speaking about, and I've taken from our conversation, is sometimes you need to take that step back, and whatever's a modality that gets you to reconnect a bit more with your own essence, there's a golden essence you can extract from that. That will be what makes you stand out. That will make you pattern interrupt, because you're actually going to do something that comes from you, not something that's so focused externally to do like everyone else. I also love that you've spoken to your colleague, maybe controversial approach, which is don't go look at competitors to try to find out how to position yourself. You got to look to the inside. And I think, to me, as someone who does want to do both, I think we've went too far into looking at the competitors and it's killed completely the creativity. I mean, you've even shared how every step of our education has forced us to try to do like others. But the competitive advantage, especially when AI is there to aggregate everything, everything's moving towards an average, everything's moving towards homogeneousness. We need to look at ourselves. And I think the humanity, if we extract that, we amplify that, is what's going to translate into some effective marketing. I also love how story is at the core of everything. And I think if we even go on our own journeys, I think we can extract some amazing stories if we take the time on focusing on ourselves, seeing how we want to translate into message. Because I think quietly, everybody's yearning for something quite similar, which is maybe seeing the humanity in all of us. Troy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for your efforts. Where could people go to discover more about what you're doing if they're interested in this field of psychedelics? Maybe this is a platform that they'd want to get their own education.
Yeah. So the website is guidescollective.com. And the service to connect you with a guide, which is take a survey and then have a conversation with us, it's normally $27. But Jason, I'm going to give you a coupon code that you can put on the bottom. But for your audience, let's do it for free. I'm just starting this. I want the word out. So I'll get you a coupon code and you can actually, I'll just make one. Let's call it Jason. Does that work?
Selling with love would probably be the best.
Selling with love. That's so many letters, man. I thought you were a marketer. Okay.
SWL.
Okay. SWL is the coupon code. But if you're curious about finding a guide and want to explore psychedelics in a safe way, go to guidescollective.com and do SWL as a coupon code.
Ooh, we'll actually have that all in the show notes if you're interested. And, you know, this was a fascinating conversation for me. It's an area I've not explored, but I'm glad we can bring this conversation forward. You know, for everybody else, stay curious, keep selling with love, which brings me to a question I do ask all my guests who come on the show, and I want to make sure I get to squeeze that one for you too, Troy. You are on the Selling with Love podcast. So what does selling with love mean to you?
That one's easy. It's empathy. I have the golden rule, right? Which is probably the only scriptural rule I live by. But do unto others as others would do unto you. And anything that you're doing, if you're okay, if someone else was doing it to you, then you're on the right path. That's really the only moral compass you need. And if you don't feel that way, you're selling the wrong thing.
Troy, thank you for your time. All the best. Excited to see the wave getting amplified in the right direction. And I think we have a lot of healing that needs to happen in the world. And I think you'll be playing a part.
I love you, brother. Thank you so much.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.